We pressed the representatives at Charmin, and their response was, "We're working on it. It's just a concept." So.
It sounds a little thin. You might call this concept one ply.
One ply.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to GeekWire. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
I'm GeekWire managing editor Taylor Soper.
And I'm pleased to welcome into the studio Kevin Lasota, GeekWire's photographer, videographer, developer, and consigliere.
And CES toilet reporter.
Exactly.
Glad to be here.
You know, I always feel like the godfather when I call you our consigliere.
You're more like a Fredo to me.
So the two of you are just back from CES, aka the Consumer Electronics Show, although they don't call it the Consumer Electronics Show anymore, right? Anyway, you were down in Vegas. You have seen the cutting edge in tech, including toilets, as you just alluded to, Kevin. So we're going to be talking about your highlights from the week, the things you saw, what it says about the future of technology. We're going to be talking about Amazon, pizza making robots, parallel reality, Sonos. But let's start with Shaq, shall we? Because I know that everybody always asks, when you come back from CES, two things. What was the coolest thing you saw? And who was the coolest person you saw? Who were the celebrities that you saw? I know you saw Shaq. Was he the coolest one?
Certainly the tallest one. And he's told us in years past he is the world's tallest geek. And that was definitely true this year. Shaq was at an Amazon event. He was at the Amazon booth. He spent a lot of time with Amazon. He is a Ring investor, the doorbell company that Amazon owns. And Shaq was there. Guy Fieri was at the same event as Shaq, the celebrity chef.
And yeah, the two of them were serving up drinks with a bunch of the important Amazon devices executives, Mark Witten from Fire TV and
Dave Limp, the devices chief.
Yeah, and then Jamie Siminoff was there too. And so, you know, Shaq being the spokesperson was kind of holding court with all these important Amazon guys.
It was interesting. I saw all the celebs at that event and all I could think was clearly they were just trying to distract everybody from the controversies that were brewing around Amazon this week, because they had two big ones. Ring, as you mentioned, Jamie Siminoff was there. They were sued by some of the families that had their cameras hacked into, which you asked him about. You cornered him, Taylor, and got him to talk a little bit about how they're approaching that. And he basically said, hey, we're staying the course. This is kind of normal for companies to go through turbulent times like this. And then he talked about productizing security as part of their app and privacy, which I thought that was frankly a poor choice of words. But at any rate, so there was the Ring situation. And then Amazon was essentially accused by Sonos, the high-tech speaker maker, of ripping off its technology, Sonos's technology for multi-room music. And you also asked Dave Limp about that. Sonos sued Google, but they also at the same time said they would have sued Amazon if they sort of had the time and money to do it. What was the mood there at this event? Because you've got all these controversies. Were they successful in distracting the assembled press from the controversies?
I'd say so. And, you know, there were celebs. There was a robotic popcorn server. So
and there's a Lamborghini that Shaq was trying to squeeze himself into and required assistance to get out of.
So distraction success.
Well, no, but that's not true, because you got them to address these things.
Yeah. They were remarkably open at this event. You know, Amazon is usually pretty guarded and very planned and prescriptive when it comes to press events. And this, we got open access to three very consequential executives there who were very open with their answers. So it was, I thought that part was good.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's what they did after the devices event at the Spheres this year. They had a reception where most of the top executives were there. And then Jeff Bezos himself made an appearance and sat there and held court with the reporters for 10 minutes and actually made some news. So I agree with you. It actually is good that they're being somewhat more accessible to the public via the press if the press is doing its job holding the Amazon execs accountable, as you did. You asked him about the stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
So it did not succeed, Taylor. All right. So that was the Amazon event. What kind of news did they have this week? What were the big headlines coming out of CES from Amazon?
I mean, this one wasn't really news, but I wrote about it, which is they had a gigantic presence in the automotive hall. So the North Hall of the Las Vegas Convention Center is all automobiles, concept cars, flying taxis from all the big automakers. And Amazon historically, while they've had some presence at CES, they've never had giant booths. In this case, smack right in the middle of all the concept cars was this giant Amazon booth highlighting all of their automotive technologies, both Alexa for cars and some of the AWS services that they try to sell to dealerships and automakers.
I'm going to push back on your assertion that that's not news, because it's a long-term news trend. They are pushing into cars. And really,
in a huge way.
If you look at where Alexa is and some of the saturation that Alexa may be reaching in the home, especially amid some of these privacy concerns about these smart speakers and voice assistants listening in on what you're doing in your house, I could see where they're going to be looking for their existing customers to start using Alexa in new places, such as the car.
Yeah, for sure. And we use our cars every day, or at least some of us do. And I think it's a continuation. When you're in your house, you want to use Alexa. And then when you leave your house in your car, you want to keep using Alexa, at least in Amazon's ideal world. So really interesting to see the strategy there. Like Kevin said, not just with Alexa, but also some AWS there. So all different sorts of Amazon's arms are kind of like touching the car.
Yeah. And they actually showed, even with Alexa, they showed the some new integrations with the Lamborghini. So typically Alexa in the automobile is, you know, you're just
totally asking. Relatable to me, by the way, the Lamborghini. Oh, the Lamborghini? Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
But it actually allowed you to control some of the car's functions.
Oh.
So you could turn on the seat heaters. You could change the color of the interior lighting. So normally Alexa, you just ask questions in the car.
Or play Amazon music, right?
Yeah, you don't control features of the automobiles. So the tentacles of Alexa are going deeper into automotive.
This reminds me of what would happen whenever Microsoft would trot out Windows Automotive or different features to power the telematics and information systems in cars. The first or second line of the story would always have to be, no, don't worry, they're not actually going to be operating the car. Could there reach a point where you say, Alexa, drive me to X?
Well, I suppose in a fully autonomous world, there are plenty of companies out there that would love to have a solution like that.
And in between these time periods, for now, you can at least ask Alexa to pay for gas. So that is one of the announcements that Amazon did make this April. You can pull up to a gas station over 11,000 Exxon or mobile stations and say, Alexa, pay for gas. And users will be directed to confirm the station location and pump number. And then the transaction is processed through Amazon Pay. So that sounds cool in theory, but much like almost everything at CES, it's like, why? Like, I'd rather just step out of my car and pay and then pump my gas. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it'd save that much time, but it's kind of cool.
And my big question when I first saw this headline was, wait a second, does that mean the gas pumps themselves are going to have Alexa in them? And the answer is no. It's an Alexa-enabled vehicle or a smartphone. You're essentially bringing Alexa to the pump and then using that version of Alexa to pay for your gas. I agree with you. Like, why? That seems like more of a pain than just getting out and putting your credit card in the thing.
For sure.
Okay. Well, but that's not the only Alexa-enabled device that we came across.
What else?
Procter & Gamble is making an Alexa toothbrush.
I missed this. I missed this in the coverage. This is like the one story that I missed.
Kevin's fascination at CES this year with the toothbrushes.
I've covered toothbrushes in multiple years. And this particular one, so imagine an Echo Dot.
Yes.
So if you had a electric toothbrush plus an Echo Dot in your bathroom, how many outlets would you use?
Two.
What if the charging base for your electric toothbrush was also basically like a waterproof Echo Dot?
Is that what it is?
That's exactly what it is. But it's from Oral-B. So the funny thing with toothbrushes, not to go on a toothbrush tangent here, but when we were there, I don't know, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we kind of chuckled about this crazy French company that was making this Bluetooth-enabled smart toothbrush, and we laughed about it. Now, Colgate and Procter & Gamble, the two biggest names in toothbrushes, are all over connected Bluetooth-enabled smart toothbrushes.
And the whole idea is to track your brushing, right?
Track your brushing, give you coaching if you're missing areas in your mouth, and they're $200 to $300, and I like my electric toothbrush. I just don't need it connected to an app.
Well, That was not the only part of the bathroom that you covered, Kevin.
You can also get Alexa for the toilet at a quite a steep price. Taylor, I think you encountered this one.
For all the people that are really interested in upgrading their bathrooms, Kohler has a $7,500, $8,000 smart toilet with Alexa.
An $8,000 toilet.
We use the toilet every day, so you could justify that.
Why'd you look at me as if that was a question?
Todd likes Alexa. I can see him buying this.
I do. I'm a big Alexa user, but not this big.
We did have a lot of fun in terms of bathroom tech, so toothbrushes and toilets.
That wasn't the biggest toilet news of the show, though.
Yeah. Amazon and Kohler were dwarfed in terms of their toilet announcements.
What was the big news?
Oh, this was the biggest news of the show.
Oh, is this the robot?
Yes. Well, okay. There were three toilet technologies from the toilet paper maker Charmin, which captured the imagination of both the national and international media.
So we should caveat these. These are marketing concepts, but they were definitely the talk of CES this week. It was even on Stephen Colbert. Basically, they came out with three innovations. The first, which is Rollbot, a Bluetooth-enabled robot designed to deliver a fresh roll of toilet paper to you when you unexpectedly run out on the throne. We've all been there.
Yes, and I was very disappointed, Kevin, that you did not have the word "when you're in a pinch" in the headline.
I will say, you know, Taylor got a firsthand look at this robot, and there are some really obvious technical questions.
Yes.
So, like, how does the robot actually pick up the roll of toilet paper? It has no...
Well, maybe you pre-position the toilet paper on the bot.
Okay, but how does the robot open the door when you're out of toilet paper?
Maybe you're on your own floor without the need to shut the door.
We pressed the representatives at Charmin, and their response was, "We're working on it. It's just a concept." So.
It sounds a little thin. You might call this concept one ply.
One ply. But it wasn't just the robot.
Not only the robot. There was smell, sense.
Oh, but wait, there's more.
A lot more. So technology is helping us refill our toilet paper. And it's also detecting fart smells in the bathroom.
Oh, when can I stop this?
I mean, they had a doctor. They had like a PhD. Wait, they had a PhD giving this demo at their booth.
Okay, now you got to explain it. What?
Smell Sense combines a fart sensor with an LED display that alerts you whether a bathroom is safe or toxic to enter. So they actually had a demo with an apparent doctor who explained how this thing works.
Apparent purported.
He said a doctor. It's a doctor on his name tag. And it was, he claimed some sort of doctoral work in fart technology.
Well, back to the point of the gas station. I mean,
no pun intended. Yeah,
to me, there's a very easy smell sense technology that all of us are carrying around with us every single day. It's called our damn noses.
Yeah, I know, but this prevents you from having to use the nose because it alerts you that the bathroom is polluted.
My God. Wow. Can you imagine if somebody put all this bathroom technology into one bathroom?
Bathroom, I mean, of the it future, would, baby.
Wow. Wow.
I have to say, so these were nothing more than large marketing pranks by Charmin.
Look at how it's working.
Well, we were there. We were literally standing there in the Procter & Gamble booth. Jeffrey Katzenberg, the Hollywood mogul who has a $1 billion streaming startup, was sitting on the Procter & Gamble stage talking to the chief brand officer from Procter & Gamble, two hugely influential people. And then, like, all the press, like us and a camera crew from CNN, were totally ignoring them so that we could take videos of this stupid robot.
I thought when you said he was sitting on something, you were going someplace else with that.
No. He was literally 10 feet away, though, in the same booth. But the Charmin folks definitely won the day for best marketing at CES 2020.
There was another company, though, that did pretty well, and that was a Seattle startup. And we're going to get into that right around the corner. You're listening to GeekWire.
Technology moves fast. I need to move faster. WGU's competency-based education puts me in control of how fast I move through my IT degree program. I can accelerate my program by applying what I already know to my courses and focusing on the things I need to learn. Earn a respected accredited degree that propels your career in the IT field. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. We're talking with Kevin Lasota and Taylor Soper, who are just off the plane, basically, from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. So in addition to all of the high-tech, very important bathroom technology that you all covered, reported on thoroughly, there was a Seattle startup called Picnic that not only had a presence at the show, but they were actually providing a vital service at the show. Do you want to explain this one?
So Picnic is a Seattle-based startup, and they have developed a pizza-making robot. Geekwire reported on this a few months ago. And not only was Picnic at CES to kind of show off their tech, they were also providing food. They partnered with CenterPlate, which is a big, you know, food services provider at large events and venues. And their pizza-making machine fed hungry CES attendees. So I had a chance to check it out. And unfortunately, I didn't actually taste the pizza. So bad journalism there. But it was a hit and everyone was talking about it.
So it's not a robot that looks like a human. It's essentially a
conveyor belt assembly of pizzas at high speed.
Exactly. So did you see how quickly it was going?
So you put the dough down and then it gets on the conveyor belt and it probably takes a minute, 2 minutes to go through the different modules, sauce, cheese, fresh sliced pepperoni, and then any other toppings you'd want to put on the pizza. It comes out. Normally with Picnic setup, it goes straight into the oven. This one, they actually had CenterPlate employees moving the pizza into the oven, goes to the oven, pops out, and is done. So pretty good for a use case at like CES when you need to make a lot of pizzas for a lot of people all the time. Picnic is also working with the Seattle Mariners to serve pizza at baseball games. So interesting to see Picnic kind of kill two birds with one stone. They're a big highlight. People wondered what was going on. And they also actually fed people. So it was like technology that was not 10 years in the future, but actually here working now.
So you can be forgiven for not tasting the pizza because after all, it's pizza. Who hasn't tasted pizza before? I assume that if it's made by a robot, it doesn't taste any different.
Yeah, but we did taste blockchain.
What? That's not where I thought we were going. What? Wait, what? What is the flavor of blockchain?
It's very metallic and tastes like metal.
That's right.
We did have a fancy dinner. So Aaron Sanchez, who is a celebrity chef, was giving a dinner with IBM. And he's a big fan of blockchain and tracking the ingredients from the farm to his restaurant, and he loves that ability and the accountability that it gives to the to his ingredients. And so he fed us a
oh man, that blockchain was real good.
It was blockchain enabled dinner.
All right, I was actually going to the fake pork. The fake meat.
Well, that we had blockchain after we sampled the fake pork.
Okay, so blockchain was almost like the dessert after the pork.
Yes.
So let's talk about Impossible Foods. This is a company that is backed by Bill Gates and other prominent investors. It is known in part for the Impossible Burger, the existing fake ground beef or
plant-based fake beef.
Yes, exactly. That's they prefer the word plant-based. We call it fake.
It is still fake beef or fake. And now they introduced two new meats at CES, the Impossible Pork and Impossible Sausage.
So you tried the pork.
The pork. The sausage is they did not have available for tasting, and that will become available. Burger King is going to be the first to launch the Impossible Sausage in a breakfast sandwich.
Wow.
It will be called the Impossible Croissant Sandwich.
So you tried the pork. I read your reviews, but I'd love to hear them here. What did you think of the Impossible Pork, the newest in fake meat?
My first bites were juicy and tender and flavorful. And if you told me it was real pork, I would have believed you.
It did have a very, you know, it's basically a replacement for ground pork. And it had a meat-like consistency to it.
That's not going to go in their advertising. It had a meat-like consistency to it.
Well, it did. And the problem was, we were at this high-end Asian restaurant in the Mandalay Bay Hotel, and they had very flavorful samples. You know, the sauces were very strong, and so it was overpowered by. I thought it was overpowered by the preparations that they made. So you couldn't really get to the underlying flavor of the meat so much.
I would say that pork in a lot of varieties is that way. You're adding barbecue sauce to it, and the underlying meat itself doesn't necessarily have the flavor that some other meats do. That's just my experience. Maybe I haven't been eating the right pork.
Well, but, you know, compared to like a pork loin or something or a pork chop where there's not a super strong flavor to it. These were, it was tasty. My hang up on it, if you compare the sodium content of real pork to this impossible pork, sodium content is actually much, much higher in the fake pork.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, of course, the fat and cholesterol content is far lower in impossible. Well,
zero cholesterol on the plant-based one, which is
one of big reason why you might go for impossible foods. Also, there's the environmental impact that they like to tout. I did ask Guy Fieri about impossible foods, given that he's a chef. He doesn't foresee himself or others, you know, using impossible foods as a complete replacement, but he did credit them. He's like, when something's going up with Burger King, you know it's a big deal. So impossible pork, let's see what their next evolution is.
All right, we've gone from bathrooms to the kitchen. Next up, the airport. All right, welcome back. We are rounding up CES 2020. It's our CES team, Kevin Lasota and Taylor Soper. They were there this week in Las Vegas getting a glimpse of the future. And I would say that this next thing that we're talking about is probably the most futuristic thing that I've experienced. Maybe that's not true, but we saw an early demo of parallel reality from a company called Misapplied Sciences based in Redmond. And they had a demo at CES with Delta Airlines that's going to be rolling out in the Detroit airport later this year. Taylor, you got to experience this in person, but I think I can sort of explain the concept first. The whole idea is that multiple people can look at the same display at the same time and see on that display different things. In addition to that, the content on the display can be personalized to each person and track essentially that person around a space. So this is going to be rolled out in a beta with Delta Airlines. How's that going to work? What did you see and how's the technology going to play out at the airport?
So the whole idea is you get through security, you're at the airport, and you want to know what gate you need to go to and what time your flight is actually departing. So you look up at that big board. Traditionally, in airports today, there's all the flights there, so you kind of have to squint and find your destination with your gate number. The idea behind Misapplied Sciences and Delta's partnership here is to basically tailor each person's viewing experience so the whole screen only shows your flight information. So I got to go through the demo they had. Delta had a big booth at CES, which was quite uncommon for an airline. They were actually the first airline to ever have a CES booth. And there was Misapplied Sciences, its co-founder and CEO was there as well. And you basically walk through the experience, you get your boarding pass, and then you look up and it says, "Hello, Taylor, your flight to Seoul is on time at gate A9, boarding in 30 minutes at 1:55 p.m.
But only you are seeing that.
Exactly. So there are four or five others in my group, and each of us had our own tailored image on that screen. And so you could walk, everyone could walk around and our image would stay on that screen, just kind of like you explained before.
For you only, and only you were seeing the display and the content that you were intended to see, because they were essentially tracking you. Was that through a phone?
Exactly. They give you a paper boarding pass with a QR code and you scan it at the front. And right when you scan it, there's actually an overhead camera. And when that happens, the camera identifies you as an anonymous blob. And so right after you scan the QR code, the camera knows where you are and tracks kind of your blob as you walk around. And based on where that blob is, it's directing the image to the screen. So there's, you know, four or five different blobs there, which are the four or five people that were doing the demo, basically matching the blob with what should be on that screen. So it's difficult to describe, but once you see it, it is one of those wow experiences that all three of us had at the Misapplied Sciences headquarters. And now, faster than I actually expected, it's actually being used for a real world use case with a gigantic company.
Well, they did invest in it.
Delta invested in Misapplied Sciences.
Correct, which is that's the genesis of why they were there at CES. And it is a use case, you know, airline, you know, that was one of the things when they showed us their initial demo. It is a use case where thousands of people walk through, and if you could customize those displays to show something different to every one of those people based on what flight they're on, that's an interesting use case. Taylor and I were actively debating whether that's a must-have use case when we were in the airport on our way home. You know, are those signs really that hard to read and worth going through the extra effort to put these displays up?
And is your smartphone really not sufficient? Why can't you just look down at your phone and have a...
Sure. And that's a much simpler solution to this. That's not to say that the technology isn't impressive. All three of us were kind of blown away when we saw it at the demo in Redmond. Whether airlines and airports are the ultimate destination for that, I'm not 100% sure.
The application that they've discussed that I would actually like to see first is the speed sign. In other words, right now you're driving down the freeway and you look at the digital sign that says your speed is, and sometimes it's hard to tell whether they're talking about your car or the car in front of you, the car behind you. Of course, again, there you could look down at your speedometer. That said, I think that is perhaps a more interesting application. I'm actually surprised because some of the founders of this company, not all of whom are still there, but they have a entertainment history with Disney Imagineering. I actually imagined them rolling this out first in an arena, a stadium of some sort, where it would present a different view of a Jumbotron to folks in different seats.
Right.
Yeah, I think with this particular situation, Delta reached out to Miss Applied, and I think Miss Applied sees this as a fast way to get it out there and get people knowing about this technology. One of the big questions with this technology, and we addressed this when we all first tested it out, was the privacy around this. And since we tested it out till today, I mean, the privacy conversation has only increased. And so Delta did say this is going to be an opt-in experience. All the information is going to be on their servers and databases. But I mean, for the amount of benefit this brings you versus, you know, the privacy aspects, because the boarding pass might be used to track you, but they said facial recognition, a smartwatch could be also used to kind of match where you are. I don't know how badly I want Delta to have access to all my...
They already do. They already have...
Through the phone.
I flew Delta, and I forget what airport I was in, but they allowed me to board based purely on facial recognition, and I had never given them my face other than my ID. So I think in an airport scenario, I think the privacy thing is already gone. It's just part and parcel of flying these days. There is no privacy at airports. If you're going to fly commercially, you are going to be subjected to facial capture and biometric capture, whether you want it or not.
And I think a lot of folks would take that even further and tell you that there is no privacy anymore if you're using a smartphone with location-based services. By default, at least, a lot of times you are being tracked.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We've talked about a lot of fun stuff here, and CES really is a show in that way. What were your takeaways from the tech perspective? Like, were there any key trends that you saw in particular, Kevin or Taylor, that stood out that defined CES of this year in the way that, I don't know, HD DVD or IoT or those types of things might have defined CESs of years past?
I don't know that there's an overarching theme to this year's CES. There were an awful lot of concepts out there, perhaps more concepts than real products this year. The fight between Alexa and the Google Assistant is alive and well and will continue for the foreseeable future. There were some crazy TV concepts. There's always crazy TV concepts at CES. Probably the most unusual one, Samsung had a TV that you could rotate vertically. You could project videos from your phone in a vertical aspect ratio.
You mentioned IoT, and they did a kind of a trends to watch, the CES organizers at the outset of the show, and they said that we're moving from IoT, Internet of Things, to IoT, Intelligence of Things. We're moving from, yes, there are devices and gadgets all around us, tracking us or whatever, but now these gadgets have smarter intelligence, basically, and AI and machine learning packed into that, and that kind of brings it to another level. And so we're seeing that you know, across the technology spectrum. And the other theme I saw was just robotics and robots.
Even unusual robots.
Yeah, like there were a lot of companion robots. So one of them we saw out of Tokyo, Japan, was kind of a companion robot that actually responded to when you like pet it and when you like caressed it. And it like responded in a happy way.
Is it like
way.
The cuddle bot or
basically,
something?
Basically, yeah.
Kind of. It's called the Lovebot.
Yeah, it was a little like creepy.
Yet again, a regular, ordinary replacement for that, cats.
Well, no. The Lovebot is not a cat robot. There was a different cat robot.
I'm sorry.
So if you want an artificial cat, as a companion, they had that. There was a dog companion robot as well.
It gets into the question of, you know, when are these companion robots, companion dogs going to ever be better than the real thing?
Well, here's the issue, though. This is really wicked in terms of what tech is doing here. Tech is separating us from the rest of humanity. We're now interacting with people, having, quote, friends on Facebook, digital relationships, and now they're replacing the companionship they've taken away from us with the robots. I mean, this is really kind of perverse in a lot of ways, maybe. Which is a good way to round up a discussion of CES. Because CES is nothing if not perverse.
That's
it really
true.
Is.
It is. And I totally see where that's, you know, where you're coming from with that. I do see some positive benefits with these types of companion robots. I mean, whether it's kids or maybe seniors. I don't know. Maybe I'm grasping for straws here. I try to keep a positive attitude at CES because I think you can get really jaded. It's more of just, you know, what's possible versus what's coming. But to your point, it is a little, I guess it's kind of concerning.
I don't know if it's concerning. I mean, I've owned pets for many years and I could see a robot replacing some of the pet companionship in an easier to maintain way for like an elderly person that can't take the dog outside. There are emotional reactions that you can get, and I don't think there's any harm in that. I think if you're replacing humans, that's a different story. And there was a huge hype booth there, for lack of a better description, the Neon. Did you see the Neon avatars? So Neon is a company. It's a Samsung company. Either Samsung supported it or spun it out or something. And they had a giant presence there for these avatars. And essentially, they are computer generated people.
Wait, on a screen or in the real
world? Yes, on a screen. But they're not. It looks like you're watching a video of a person and you can interact with them, but it's not a video of a person. It's computer generated. Like their interaction with you is all generated based on some base level of imagery that they have.
And here's the thing. If augmented reality does live up to its potential, you can start to connect the dots here where you put on your eyeglasses or whatever, and then this augmented reality thing pops up and it's, you know, it's a dog or it's a human and they're moving around. They can hear you. They respond to you. And you think about how advanced Alexa and Google Assistant are becoming almost like you're talking to a real person. It starts to like get either really exciting or creepy depending on how into this technology you are.
Yeah. And I don't really understand what the point of these Neon avatars. There was an awful lot of hype around them. I don't know what the use case is or the business model other than, hey, we created these like artificial people on screen. It was very bizarre.
Well, Taylor, you said something that I don't want to get lost. You said CES is about what's possible, not what's coming. And I think that for me over the years has been the key evolution of my thinking. These are ideas that they're showing here at this show. And I think a lot of times they can spark other ideas and generate brainstorms and creativity among other companies. These are not necessarily the things that we're going to see on the shelves next holiday season.
True. And we as the media tend to ignore the stuff that's coming next season onto the store shelves is also there. You know, if you look at what TVs are going to show up at Best Buy? Well, guess what? The buyer for Best Buy was at CES and made all his TV deals in the last week. same thing for laptops and, you know, video displays. So there's a lot of that that goes on. We report about the exciting things, you know, the Alexa-enabled toilets and fake meats. But they're, I think at its core, CES is about stocking those store shelves with electronic gear.
Yeah, and another thing to touch on is basically that all these companies, a lot of them are doing their own events now. CES kind of was that place where you announced your product. Microsoft used to be a mainstay. I believe they introduced the Xbox there with like The Rock and Bill Gates. Now companies like Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, they're hosting their own events. And so that's kind of where they announce the next iPhone, the next Xbox. Even Samsung, which had an absolutely massive booth at CES, they really announced their flagship product at their own events as well. So it's no longer the place where you announce the new game-changing product, but maybe where you announce the new game-changing idea.
Well, welcome back. I could tell you both had a lot of fun down there.
It was. It was a lot of fun, and cool to see the future or a glimpse of the future, and can't wait for Toilet Tech 2021.
Yeah, and having stayed with Taylor for a week, it will be good to have Charmin's smell sense installed in the bathrooms around Taylor.
Ouch, wow. Ouch. Oh, on that note, until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Stinky Taylor Soper.
I'm Kevin Lasota.
We'll talk to you next time on GeekWire. Oof, that was below the belt.
That's Dude, I didn't ever sync it up.